The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International and Music for All.
We learn who these students are when they aren't in front of us. What kind of representative would they be for our program? And sometimes you're surprised both ways. You can really learn something about somebody who is seemingly very meek or very quiet. And then you can also learn, unfortunately, that there are some people who put on a good face that may not uphold all of the ideals that your program does, and that maybe you need to think a little bit more about their candidacy before you move forward.
That's Dr. Nikki Gross of Auburn University. And on this podcast, she and Gary Rupert of LCL Mentors share some ideas about selecting student leaders, perhaps including some ideas you may not have thought of. Members at Marching Arts Education can see the video version of this podcast in our Members Only section. There's a link to that video where this podcast is located at the Marching Roundtable. Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, LCL Mentors, found at lclmentors.com. Selecting student leaders on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by LCL Mentors, found at lclmentors.com. Gary Rupert is here from LCL Mentors. Gary, can you tell us about the mission and the work that LCL Mentors is doing?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. LCL is a network of music educators across the country. Well, actually, not all music educators. We have other educators as well that are strewn across the country. And our mission is to kind of fill the gaps for music programs at both the collegiate level and at the public school and private school level where they are needed. We have people that have expertise in a variety of different ways. And the great thing about it is that if we're working with a group and they need something, then I know a person who knows a person who knows a person, and we can connect them with the people that they need that can help them out. We actually offer services at a variety of different levels. We do student leadership programs for all the bands. We do staff development programs. We also do one-on-one mentoring for school systems where we are mentoring teachers through the course of the year during a time when they need the most support and help.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Marching Roundtable podcast. This is Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts, and we're talking about selecting student leaders. And now you're thinking, oh, no, wait a minute. I already know everything there is to know about selecting student leaders. Well, we're always should be open to new ideas. And I tell you, we have a couple ringers here from LCL Mentors who have a lot of really great ideas for you. Gary Rupert is here. Gary, how are you?
I'm very well, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here. And Dr. Nikki Gross is with us. Nikki, how are you?
I'm good, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being here. So, everybody, we're going to talk about a lot of the ins and outs of selecting student leaders, things that will be helpful to you as you're starting to think about this. I think there'll be some wrinkles that you don't know or haven't done a certain way or thought about this way. Gary, why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Sure. My name's Gary Rupert. I'm a retired music teacher of 40 years, and I currently work for LCL as the lead mentor and COO, and I live in the state of Maryland.
All right, very good. And Nikki.
Hi, my name is Nikki Gross, and I'm the Assistant Director of Athletic Bands at Auburn University currently. I'm in my 20-something year of teaching. I've got a mix of public school and higher ed in there. But when I taught public school, I was in the southwestern part of Virginia in those schools for 7 years.
Okay, I love that. So it's really interesting, everybody. We have a perspective of not only classroom and high school, but Nikki's going to bring some college level stuff for us. And I think that is going to be really, really valuable as well. So Gary, this is this podcast, we're really appreciative. It's being sponsored by LCL Mentors. Can you briefly tell us about the work that LCL Mentors does?
Yeah, we're a network of professionals all across the country that have varying focuses of attention on what we do. And our mission is to be a support system for band programs all over the country to be able to fill the gaps where they're not able to get the support that they need. For example, mentoring teachers quite often in larger school systems, it's impossible for young teachers in particular to get the mentoring that they need. And we're able to provide that for them. We also do student leadership workshops as well as staff development.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you to LCL Mentors for sponsoring this. And everybody, they do great work helping Everybody have a person they can call and say, wait a minute, I don't know what's happening here. I need some advice. We all need to have that person to call, and LCO Mentors is, that's one, of course, one of many things that they do. So, all right, selecting student leaders. I think this is very interesting. I had a wonderful conversation one time with Jessica Slaybaugh, who has a wonderful program at American Fork High School, and she said that she basically trains her students the same way she trains her staff. So if she's standing in front of her color guard staff and she's going to teach them, here's how we run a rehearsal, here's how we interact, here's how we're respectful of each other, blah, blah, blah. She made sure and explained that exact same things to her student leaders. Nikki, you're shaking your head, right? It's really the same training if you're going to be standing in front of people and helping to lead them.
It is. And if you've been teaching for a while, or even if you're just starting teaching, you may not realize that others who are not teaching every day, you take things for granted that they may not know to do. So it is important. I can tell you that throughout my career, even high school through the college programs that I've been associated with, we have all taken a concentrated period of time during the beginning part before band camp starts in August to sit down for 2-3 days to talk about, here's how you run a sectional, and not only talk about it, but actually put it into action and put those students in front of the other leaders that have come together with their instruments. And we give them, we give them the opener to the show and say, now, will you please teach us from the beginning over to measure 24? And we take them through the good teaching sequencing and what to do when students are having trouble with notes and how to slow it down, how to conduct through something like that, and give them feedback and also ask them questions. You know, what are you hearing? What did you hear in this measure? Is the rhythm right? You know, trying to help guide them on what to listen for and how to listen and where to listen and how to wrap it up and how to keep it going, you know, how to keep it moving and not let it drag down as well. So all kinds of teaching, you know, concentrated on what the section leaders are going to do, concentrated on what the drum majors are supposed to do. Actually, the most of the time that we spend training our drum majors, it's considerably more time because they have additional responsibilities and they're out in front more than maybe the section leaders are, you know. So actually here at Auburn, we're with them all summer. We've got meetings all summer spaced out with the drum majors. But yes, that training is... And it doesn't, it happens, it's all front loaded, but it continues to happen throughout the season as well when we have a need to come back around or to provide them feedback.
Yeah, Gary, do you want to weigh in on that? Like, I remember I was in high school, my high school was 8 through 12. And I found myself, and as a ninth grader, as a section leader, and I remember that they were just like, go do it. You know, and I remember standing out in front of my section and like literally I had no idea. I mean, I knew how to help them learn to play their notes or whatever, but I had no idea what I was doing. So like, we really do have to sort of prepare them for the job.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I agree with Nikki in terms of teaching them all of the nuts and bolts kinds of things from the musical standpoint. When I was teaching, I found very early that young leaders will emerge. When they're freshmen and sophomores, you get to be able to watch them, because in most bands, you're not going to have the situation you were describing where as a ninth grader, you're the section leader. So you get to watch them and you get to see who has kind of natural leadership skills, who are people following in the group. And then what I would do is I would kind of earmark those people and start training them then, talking to them about, you know, how they can effectively help the rest of the group. And to be looking forward to them moving into leadership roles as they got to that age level where they would be qualified to do that. So the training started way back then. And then as they got the job, like Nikki, we would name our section leaders in the spring, and then we would work with them all summer long. And then before every rehearsal that we had, the section leaders would meet before the rehearsal. And there was always some little leadership lesson that I would have going on. It was, if I could, I could make it relevant to that particular day. But then we would talk about what needed to happen that day in rehearsal, who was going to be responsible for doing those things. You know, how would we know if we were successful at the end of the rehearsal?
so that we know that we're going to teach, you know, we're going to assess, and then we have to reteach. And so we would do all of that before rehearsal, and then we would meet again after rehearsal for about 15 or 20 minutes to just kind of review how our rehearsal went, whether or not we were effective at what we thought we were going to do, and if not, how do we adjust for the next rehearsal? So for us, it was an ongoing process the entire time that they were in any kind of leadership role.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I can imagine that someone's listening to this right now and they're thinking, oh man, I just do not have time to have all these extra meetings, spend this extra time with the students. But I want to stop and remind them of the obvious that everybody knows, but I'm going to say it anyway, which is obviously that time spent in preparing those leaders means much more is going to get done in the rehearsal that you can't do. Because this is the thing, like one band director cannot do everything. You have to have help. And most, Nikki, I know you know this, most bands don't have a giant staff, right? They don't have 10 people watching feet and 10 on the color guard. Like most bands out there, sometimes it's just that one band director and their kids. So a smaller group, a smaller band program especially, relies on the student leaders to really be able to help.
Yes, that's 100% correct. You know, and that was the situation that I was in when I was teaching high school. I had a band, a marching band of 65, maybe, you know, 55 to 65, maybe 70 around in there. And my drum major sort of functioned as an assistant band director. You know, my section leaders were skilled in not only leadership, but in how to teach marching. I taught, they cleaned, you know, that type of thing. So it, you do invest a lot of time in your leaders, but that's also time invested in your program, because if you build a strong leadership base, it's going to perpetuate itself. They are going to influence the younger students, and the younger students are going to see what is expected of them or what they want to achieve, you know, what they hope to attain. One day I'd like to be section leader, you know, and if you've got strong leadership in those positions, then it becomes a very positive cycle that can begin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, Gary, there's something really powerful that she said about that, seeing how it's done and then following in those footsteps, right? I feel like the job of the director to teach those skills maybe gets less intense as it's passed down from one year to the next.
Yeah, I think that what you end up doing as the culture grows and improves is that the kid coming out of middle school band to high school band, or from high school band to collegiate band, they don't know what that band is like until the people in the band show them. And if you have a strong culture that you've built over a few years, when those kids come into that program, they see that, and then they want to rise to the level of what they see. If unfortunately you have not built a strong culture, then obviously that's a problem as well. I think you're right. The modeling of how the program is supposed to work from top to bottom, you know, it's important for me to model things like, you know, if I want them to be on time, then I need to be on time. I can't show up, you know, 5 minutes after rehearsal is supposed to start or just as rehearsal is supposed to start. So if I model those kinds of things, if I model good teaching skills, if I model integrity, if I model character, then my student leaders begin to model those things as well. And then that gets passed down to the kids coming into the program.
Right. And we talk about how those qualities are important, because there's a lot more to being a good leader than maybe being the first chair in your section. Sometimes those are not necessarily the best leader. So Nikki, like, how do we figure out which student is actually the best leader as opposed to maybe just the best player?
Well, I think observation and watching the students from a teacher standpoint and seeing how they interact with peers, seeing who are the people that decide, hey, I'm going to help set up the chairs. I wasn't asked, but, you know, and I'm not a senior or I'm not a section leader, but I'm going to do that. Or who starts gravitating that way? You start to see it, as Gary likes to say, emerge. You start to see those students stepping up and stepping in ways just to serve, and kind of bringing forth that servant leadership ability. You know, another way that you can really dig in and figure out who these students are, if you don't have if you've got a large program, or maybe you don't know them very well, you're coming into a program new. Something that we do here, which I would feel very comfortable now if I were still teaching in high school, taking that back to a program with me, is finding a way to anonymously get feedback from the band members themselves on the leadership candidates that are put in front of them. You know, we leave it very open-ended. Students get to comment on their section leader candidate. They don't comment on other section leader candidates. You know, if you're a piccolo player, you're going to comment on the piccolo section leader candidates. And you get to comment on the drum major candidates and on a couple of other, one other leadership position that is kind of band wide. But we leave it very open. What are the pros of Susie Jones as a candidate? And what are the cons of Susie Jones as a candidate? And there's some very insightful things that come out of that. And we learn who these students are when they aren't in front of us. You know, what kind of representative would they be for our program? And sometimes you're surprised both ways. You can really learn something about somebody who is seemingly very meek or very quiet. And then you can also learn, you know, unfortunately, that there are some people who put on a good face that may not uphold all of the ideals that your program does. And that maybe you need to think a little bit more about their candidacy before you move forward.
Yeah, Gary, I think this is really powerful, getting some sort of safe, anonymous way for students to weigh in, because they do react differently to each other than they do when we're around.
They do. And I think Nikki's got a great point in terms of the observation. I used to tell my students all the time that I learn more about them outside of band than I do inside a band, because when you're inside a band, you're almost like in a bubble where they have to react in a certain way. So when I'm watching them and observing them just as they're interacting or walking down the hall every day, not necessarily even in my band room, you begin to see how they behave and the things that they like to do, the things they're good at doing. I think one of the things that's important from a director standpoint is recognizing what strengths those kids have coming into a leadership role. We used to have kids that wanted to be leaders. And like Nikki said, you know, servant leadership was a very valuable thing. And they may not be good leaders in terms of standing up in front of the section and running a sectional, but, you know, they might have a penchant for art. And so they could make signs for the band, you know, that they could put up, you know, before games or whatever. All of those kids have something of value to give to the group. And it's our job as the directors to be able to find what those things are and then put them in positions where they can use them and allow themselves to grow. And as they feel more comfortable doing that, then they start to branch out. You know, the other thing that used to bother me all the time was if you're having auditions for, say, drum major, and you ask the staff to write like a letter of recommendation for those students, I'm sure that, you know, they're going to tell you, you know, honest things and most of the time glowing things, but they don't see those kids in our setting. And so a lot of times what they tell us in those letters isn't really relevant to how they're going to respond or react when they're leading a group of their peers, because in most of those classes, they're not actually doing that. So they don't actually see them doing that. They just know that it's a great kid, you know. And one of the things that really, I guess, became a pet peeve is watching that director that picks their drum major because, like, they're a great flute player. Well, okay. That makes them a great flute player, but that doesn't make them a good drum major or a good leader. In fact, the very finest flute player I ever had in 40 years of teaching was a horrible leader. You know, her entire focus was on being a great flute player. Great, be a great flute player. Just don't be a leader, you know. And I have to be smart enough as the director to recognize that and not put those kids in a position where they're not going to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And one of the things you guys touched on that I want to sort of go back and highlight is that a lot of times the leaders don't have to be the loud, gregarious ones. Sometimes the most effective leaders are very quiet. There are students that are very effective sort of in a quiet, behind the scenes way. The one that goes up and helps somebody who's having a hard day, the one that realizes if somebody needs extra help and offers, like Nikki, that is another style of leadership that is not necessarily the one that is so obvious to see.
Correct. It is. And there may be situations where if you let's just say you're looking for your drum major and you're deciding between the gregarious one or the quieter one, you may have to make a decision between which style you think would be more effective or that the students would support more. Whereas if you have a team, if you have more than one, then you look to balance them out a little bit. One may be stronger in being more personable, and one of them is more comfortable being the face of, you know, being the public face and will be out there in front more so than the other one until some confidence is built, you know. But you can balance a team in that way as well. But yes, I tend to gravitate towards the I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to the quieter folks. You know, I've seen a lot of people be very effective, although the impression that they give when they are simply a member of the band of, you know, is doing what they need to do, and they're very quiet and they never say anything. But you get a sense that some people that are that way don't want to over, you know, they don't want to step on someone's foot. It's not their prescribed role. So they serve and they lead in other ways. But you get a sense that if they were provided the opportunity, that they will come out a little bit, come out of their shell. So I think what you have to watch for are the people that are, for the students who are, would really be uncomfortable in a public, kind of being named as a public face, you know, as a leader in that way, because there are people that that's not their bailiwick. They would prefer to stay in the back, you know.
Right. But Gary, that makes me think that, you know, if your program does have the ability to have a number of leadership roles, maybe they're not the drum major standing up on the podium, but maybe they're the band president who can be very effective at rallying the troops and keeping everybody, you know, quietly in line. You know what I mean? It's all about maybe what role is most appropriate.
Yeah, for sure. I can recall, actually, we used to have a thing that was kind of like a band cheer, which was actually nonsense syllables that didn't even make it. There were no words to it. It was just nonsense syllables. But we always had the band pick who was going to be the leader of that cheer every year. And oftentimes they were not people who would have made very good leaders in any other role. But in terms of that, you know, they really stood out. They were really very good at that. You mentioned something a few moments ago about, you know, the quiet person or the reserved person. And it struck me that one of the things that's important from a director's standpoint is to recognize the qualities of those people who are in leadership roles so that, for example, if somebody in a section is struggling in some way, shape, or form, I know which section leader to ask to go see them and to help them, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, you're in the trumpet section, so I should send the trumpet section leader. That may not be the case. That trumpet section leader may not have the personality and the empathy to be able to help that person. I need to recognize which one of my leaders has that kind of strength and that kind of skill and ask them to, hey, you know, when you get an opportunity, you know, go up and touch base with you know, John and see what's happening. You know, I think that's really an important tool.
If you have a larger program and have more than one section leader designee, just like drum majors, balancing that out, you know, you have one person who's a little bit more outgoing, a little bit more comfortable being outgoing, and you have someone who's a little quieter, you're going to have different people within that section, different personalities gravitate to ask one person or the other questions, you know, or to seek help from one or the other.
Yeah, we used to take in our larger sections, if we were going to have multiple section leaders, I would always try to find one who was really strong musically and could help the section musically, and one who was a killer marcher and may not necessarily be a good player or a great player. But so when we had to divide the group up and they had to work with their sections, if it was marching drills, then that person who was a killer marcher, that was their job. And the person that was a strong musician, they did the musical sectionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all really interesting. Speaking of band cheers that are nonsense, it reminds I know that I was a clinician with a marching band who had this very elaborate end of the rehearsal cheer thing. And I think that my impression was that someone different led it each day, which I thought was kind of cool. But what I do remember was that I was there as a clinician, and they were all dead set that I was going to lead it that day. And I will never forget that, standing in the, like, you know how those things get. Like, I'm in the middle of this circle, and like there's 200 kids all around me screaming at the top of their lungs, and I'm saying like, I had to say the same word over and over and over, and then they were yelling different things back at me. Anyway, it's pretty terrifying, but I'm sure it was a big hype for them. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's cool. I don't know why I'm sharing that story, except that I'm still traumatized by it all these years later. But anyway, it was fun. Okay, so anything else that you guys want to mention about this? Because I think we've touched on a lot of things. Nikki, anything else from the sort of university perspective that now that you've been there, is there anything you do differently there that you haven't mentioned? Or something else that you wanted to mention about that? Because I think that's an interesting perspective you have.
Well, and I have done this at several different stops again. Because band is by semester when you're in college, and it is in some high school situations too, if you're on that straight 4x4 block. I'm not sure where public school is right now on, you know, if it is it 7-period day, is it 4x4? Let me get back to the theme of all of this here. I digress. Because you've got marching band in the fall, and that's it. And we're not carrying that over to the spring. We are choosing our main student leaders in the end of the fall season. Our drum majors were selected at the end of the fall season, because having them conduct the band live is a part of the audition for the ones that make it to finalists. There's several different rounds that would be the finalist round. There's a preliminary round, and then there's a finalist round, but in which they have to, you know, do some mace work, do the run out, teach some marching fundamentals, and conduct the band live. So you can't, it's difficult to replicate that in the spring unless you're going to do it at your spring game, if you have a spring game, you know, depending upon what division you're in collegiately. So that's very valuable to see what that student looks like up in front of the band. You know, can they hold the pulse? Can they control the tempo? You know, is the band going to push them, or you let the tempo wane, or anything like that? And then, you know, they have to call cheers and things just like our drum majors do. So they prep for that audition process, but just the fact that you're choosing them in the fall. And then they are helping to, they have input on the section leader selections and the other leadership selections. We're actually getting ready to announce our slate of leaders tomorrow night. We've gone through that selection process, and we're announcing our full slate tomorrow night. And then we will start getting them to help us set up 2024 almost immediately after that with just procedures and stuff. So if I could go back and take something back, you know, I would probably try to carve out a little bit of time to put a few candidates in front of the high school band at the end of the season, you know, when we're all either trying to transition to concert performance at that point in time, or so tired that we're ready to be done, you know. But just giving them that opportunity to be in front of a live ensemble can tell you a lot.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And by the way, everybody, we're recording this at the end of February. So she's, you know, and football season ends, depending on your team, you know, usually around the holidays, right? So it's a bowl games, right, if you're lucky enough, and et cetera. So I think that's really telling that you are making those decisions so early, which you need to do, because getting ready for next fall is going to take from now till then.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. Gary, do you want to weigh in on any of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, Nikki's right. You get those kids, especially in that finals level, in front of the band. And I would make my drum majors do that as well. One of the other things that I did with my drum majors is I would ask them to take a score that we were doing, and just on a blank sheet of paper, you would mark off what would look like measures. And let's say that there's 8 measures in the introduction. They would have to go through each measure and then write down what the most important thing was going on in that measure. And literally you could conduct the entire piece from that sheet of paper, because you knew what was happening. Say in measure 13, you had to cue so-and-so, or whatever. That really
allows them to really dig into the music and see what's inherent in the music, as opposed to just conducting through the melody because that's what they know. If they've taken the time to kind of diagram each measure, then they know that there's a harmony part there that's supposed to be really important, or there's a bassline part that's coming in that's really important. So that really helped, you know, them to grow as conductors. When I think of leaders at the high school level, quite often I talk to people who talk about at the high school level that their cultures are not as strong as they would like them to be. You know, the kids are not as good of leaders as they would like them to be. And I don't do this, of course, but I would just like to scream at them at that point that if you want them to learn it, you have to teach it. Mm-hmm. And you can't just make somebody the drum major and expect them to be good drum majors. You can't make somebody a section leader and just expect them to be good section leaders. You have to teach them how to do that. And that's an ongoing process, as both Nikki and I have described. And I think that's a critical process that a lot of younger people neglect to be able to do. And then all of a sudden they have a culture that is not working for them, but it's in fact working against them.
Well, this was really, really interesting conversation. Nikki and Gary, thank you for sharing this. I think it gives us a lot to think about. I love the idea that sometimes the quieter students can be really effective leaders too. I love the idea that you need to train them just like you would train your regular staff members. They can't just get the job and then jump in. They have to have some training. And I love the idea of like monitoring them and supporting them and giving them information and having those meetings and helping them all throughout the season. So Nikki and Gary, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Find other podcasts and webinars about selecting student leaders, leadership, and band culture at Marching Arts Education and at the Marching Roundtable. Just put one of those words into the search bar to find all the existing content on the subject. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, LCL Mentors, found at lclmentors.com. This is your host, Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. Find out more about me and all that I could do to help you in your program at beastofthemarchingarts.com.
If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should sponsor podcasts at the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach. And with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the sponsorship opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast.